Pass the salt.
You know why it's disintegrating? Because we're jellyfish.
Pass the salt, will you?
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt, amigo.
It's time. It's time.
I think they could give us a new name. I believe we are Evan Jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed in this program are based on the Holy Spirit leading of a man called Coach.
I gotta ask you this out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a Coach, Dave Dobenmeyer.
Well, we're getting ready to hit the road. What's that old song? So on the road again. Macy come wanted to come down and say something to Grampy as we're loading up here this morning, getting ready to hit the highway. Hey, calling it your job, don't make it right, boys and girls. Calling it your job, don't make it right. Just got a few minutes here. I'm going to try to just do a little bit of an opening of the show. Then I'm going to turn it over to, I'm going to try to stay with us the whole time, but I'm going to turn it over to John Diamond. I'm sorry about the lighting. It's just kind of, you know, it's kind of twilight here this morning as we're all loading up, getting ready to roll. That's just too bright. That looks awful. Let me walk over here, see if I can find a better light. And crazy things going on in America. And, you know, here's one of the things I think we have to understand, be aware of. How do I say this? Pressure points. That'd be a good word to use, Coach, pressure points. The left is trying to create pressure points. And pressure points are, you've reached that before as a parent, haven't you? I've had all I can stands and I can't stands no more. Those are pressure points. The left's trying to create pressure points. I didn't really get a chance last night to look at the whole news on the Breonna Taylor thing, all that. I really didn't. I just know there's riots going on again this morning. Or went on last night anyway. Staged riots. John will talk a little bit about command posts. The underlying Obama, the army, the civilian army that President Obama built, bragged about. They've been at war with us for quite a while. And it's really what we see going on in Louisville and the cities. And, you know, I would be really remiss if I were to tell you I really understood the whole Breonna Taylor story, because I really don't. But it doesn't matter. They just need something to riot about. And that's what we've seen. Got some balloons. I got a couple of videos I want to show you, because the tyranny's at our door, folks. And again, I'm talking about pressure points, okay? I'm trying to find better light someplace. Less brightness. This whole building is kind of white. Maybe if I stand over here in this corner, this will help a little bit. Pressure points. I've got a couple of videos I'm going to show you this morning, and then I'm going to... There, that's a little better. There's little Annie Banani. Her daddy. Pressure points. The left is trying, doing everything they can. About all I can stands, and I can't stands no more. That's what they're trying to do, friends. Everywhere we look. And because of the virtue signaling, the idea that let me tell you and show you how much I care, wearing the masks and all that kind of stuff, they're gradually pushing us towards those pressure points. It's now reached even small town America. I'm going to show you a couple clips that you're probably not going to believe. First one, Mike, if you can pull that thing up there. These are all, some of you have seen these, probably some of you haven't. The first one is a clip from a 7th grade football game in Logan, Ohio. Logan, Ohio. That's just down the road from me, where I live, not down from where I am today. Just down the road. Seventh grade. Let me say it again. 7th grade football game. I'm going to warn you, there's a little bit of language here. A woman from Marietta, Ohio, who went to a 7th grade football game to watch her son play, is arrested and tased by a school resource officer. Not even a real cop, if I understand it right. And she was tased for what? Yep. She was sitting there in the stands watching her son's 7th grade football game without a mask. My daughter last night saw, Dad, there's got to be more to the story. I don't think there is more to the story. Hey, calling it your job, don't make it right. Oops. Mike, go ahead and play that video. Warning language.
I am.
Put your hand behind your back.
I will not put my hands behind my back. I'm not friendly. Don't get me wrong. Get off of me.
Yeah,
what
please.
The fuck is wrong with you?
Oh, my God.
Oh, get off of me. You're not arresting me for nothing. I am doing nothing wrong. What the fuck is wrong with you people?
This is over a mask.
Oh, my God. You're not arresting me. You're not doing nothing wrong.
If not...
Stop it! Red broke up my bread! Yes. Oh my God! Whoa!
This is not a warning. Call the cops, Raven.
Call the cops?
Yeah.
Will you talk to them?
I don't know if he's a real officer.
It says police on the side and on his back.
I don't mean anything. But he may be, Bridget, because there's a cop car over there. There's a cop car over there.
Do you want to call him?
Come on!
Tase somebody over a mask. Tasing this lady over not wearing a damn mask.
Okay, Mike, you can stop that one. Now listen, folks, I'm going to get in my car and probably I'm going to lose you here temporarily because I'm going to get off the internet here at the hotel. I'll log back on. But Mike, while I do that, Mike, I want you to go to this other clip. Folks, these both happened yesterday. And this this clip, calling it your job don't make it right, is of an outdoor church gathering in Moscow, Idaho, where this gentleman who they arrest happens to be a host of a radio show, works out great. Their church organized a psalm sing. And so they show up at the psalm sing. What happens? He gets arrested for singing outdoors. This is in America. I'm not making this up. Go ahead and play it. Mike, I'm probably going to disconnect and then come back here in a few minutes. If I'm not in yet, I'll pick it up and run. I'll be right with you.
Trust in chariots and others trust in horses. But we recall the Lord our God, strong past our own resources. Our enemies have fallen low, but we are held and upright. So save us, Lord, our God and King, as we in trouble call thee, as we in trouble call thee.
Amen!
I'm doing great.
Yeah, man, I'm doing great.
Over this patrol car here.
Didn't see this happen for BLM, Gabe.
It's unbelievable.
Isn't that weird?
Hey, just give us a little space, will you, please?
Yeah, just give us a little space.
Got it.
You guys should not be doing this and doing this kind of crap for the mayor. This is embarrassing. You guys are stronger than this.
You're more shouldn't be doing this.
Your name, sir, please?
You guys are tough people.
This is wrong.
You're a cop. Is that it, Mike? All right, brother. Hey, I want you guys, can you pull up my book cover there that I showed you yesterday, if you have that on there?
Isn't this just pathetic?
I'm going to. Can you still hear me? Mike, can you hear me?
Yes, okay. We can hear you.
Guys, I'm going to tell you what I wrote now in this book, and I wrote this back in 2003, couldn't be probably any more prophetic. And I don't consider myself a prophet. I consider myself a teacher and an educator. But my secondary gift is prophecy. I never kind of lean on that or try to claim that title. But what I wrote back in 2003, a quote from the book, I said, America is no longer America. America is now an atheistic, communistic, totalitarian police state wrapped in the American flag as a facade. When I said that 20 years ago, people just laughed. Oh, we're free. What are you talking about? No. Everything that was put in place to turn this into what you're seeing today has been in motion for about 40 years, at least 40 years. When I wrote this in 2003, all I did was study history. I studied American history. I studied English history. And I realized everything that took place prior to the American Revolution is already taking place in America today. So I wrote this book. And again, Dr. Mike just read it when we were at that conference down in Missouri a couple weeks ago. He said this thing was spot on. We need to get it back out. So we're going to re-release the book with the new cover here. So what I do, and I'm going to show you, keep in mind the videos that you just saw and draw the parallel between what we're dealing with now and what the founding fathers dealt with back then. And the only remedy for that was fighting the next American Revolution. Our cause is right. Our cause is true. We have God, we have history, we have the Constitution, we have the Bible, we have everything on our side. The only thing that we're dealing with is tyranny. And what you're watching right here, when they will not arrest Black Lives Matter protesters who are burning buildings, but they will arrest a Christian for singing, dude, guys, this is tyranny. This is 100% absolute tyranny. Until you come to that realization and understand what rights and privileges we have, not only from God, but under our Constitution, is the only thing going to turn this thing back around. So, Mike, let's go ahead and just continue the presentation from yesterday. We'll start on slide 15 where with the self-evident truths. What we looked at yesterday when we started off, we're just looking at the Declaration of Independence. And I said the Declaration of Independence had three parts. The first part was the divorce decree, look, we're not going to be able to get along. We have irreconcilable differences. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and, basically file a divorce against, that's what the Declaration of Independence was, really a divorce decree against Britain. And they said, out of respect, we're going to tell you why. So the second part of that was what I call the American Statement of Faith. And this is what we believe. This is what the colonists, the representatives in Congress were telling the king. All right, here's what we believe. Here's what you believe. There is no way we can live together any longer. So they put in the Declaration of Independence, and we won't read the whole part again. But here's the conclusion that we reached. I was looking at this morning. Actually, we could put number one is that there is a God, or that there is a creator. All right. I mean, when the federal government came in the 60s and created separation of church and state and forced evolution on the American people, that was un-American. All right. Because as Americans, we have these self-evident truths. We have this core sense of beliefs of what we believe in. Now, you may be an American citizen, but you don't ascribe to Americanism, which is a political ideology. So the political ideology of the founding fathers can be summed up with this. First off, there is a creator. We are all created equal, that the creator has given us certain rights, what we call God-given rights, that the rights, since God gave them to us, cannot be taken either by God or by man or by the government. That's what makes them inalienable. That's what we believe. That's what the Bible teaches. Now, they transition into what government's job is. The primary function of government is to protect our God-given rights from other people, including other government officials. And then number five, if they will not do that, then it's the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute a new government. So that's why we call it, the book was titled Fighting the Next American Revolution.
John?
Yes, sir.
If I can jump in here real quick, just as a teaching point. If there is no creator, there are no inalienable rights. folks, this is so so crucial for us to understand. The whole idea of the removal of God from the equation made government the ultimate authority, or we're seeing now the Supreme Court the ultimate authority, right? So the idea that we have equal rights, brothers and sisters, if we are not created by a creator, that whole idea goes out the door. The government didn't create you. The government doesn't give you rights. The government, their job is to secure rights. But once we've removed the idea of the creator, there is no such thing as equal or unalienable rights.
That's exactly right. So John, go down to slide number 22 there, and we'll pick up kind of where we left off.
But John.
Yes.
Chad, the thing is, I hear a lot of the chatter on the internet and things like that about the next civil war, And I'm really, frankly, I'm tired of hearing about it being a civil war. I like it better what you're talking about, the revolution. So can you take a moment and kind of compound between those two?
Yeah, actually, when I wrote this book to begin with, and Coach hooked me up with a publisher, he said the book was so big I would have to break it into two different books. So I did. I broke it into book one and book two, actually three books. The Appeal to Heaven book is the last of the three. But the first was called Fighting the Next American Revolution, and the second one was titled Fighting the Next American Civil War. What we're getting ready to deal with in America today is really a combination of the both. Because the Revolutionary War was basically the people rising up against a tyrannical government. The Civil War was really based on morality, where the people were split over the issue of slavery. And that's what you see in America between the left and the right, the Christian right, the atheistic left. You know, they're trying to defend this Supreme Court justice because they know that abortion is the slavery of our day. So the Civil War, the moral battle that we're fighting today, is over abortion. Primarily, I mean, gay marriage and some other things, but moral issues that didn't exist before 1960, that would be encompass the Civil War. That's what you're seeing in the streets right now. So they're not wrong by saying a civil war, but we also have to understand this civil war was created by the federal government because the federal government was the one that overstepped its authority. And I watched a commentator on the news today, the other day. When the federal government basically took all power from the state, now every single issue becomes that much more contentious because instead of the states being allowed, which is what we have a right under the 10th Amendment to do, we have a right to determine in every state what we want in our state and what we don't. When the federal government usurped all of our power and said we will decide for every state, that's when this really, really got bad in this country. So by right, we should have states. If a state says they want abortion, they have abortion. If say they want to have prayer in school, they have prayer in school. Whether they're moral or not, or whether we would consent to them, but the Constitution and the 10th Amendment of the Constitution allows the states to determine what they will and will not allow in. Now, there's ways that you can override that, and there's, you know, constitutional amendments. But that would be the contrast. I want to focus today, like you said, on the revolution part of it, because what you're going to see as I go through this presentation, what the founding fathers were faced with is the same thing we're faced with today. And not only that, but what they did was the solution, because there is a solution to all this if we just apply what they understood and what they applied. So where we left off yesterday was we looked at there were kind of four levels of government here. It's God, the Constitution, the government officials, and then the citizens. All right. So man has understood that government officials, when they're given power, usually end up becoming drunk with power and become tyrants. So starting clear back into the Old Testament, people started instituting constitutions, which would be laws that the people passed to restrain their government. Now, like I said, we can go back into Babylon and show how Darius's powers was watered down from Nebuchadnezzar's. We did that yesterday. But what I want to start with is really America. And the reason that we don't understand the Revolutionary War and the justness of the cause is because we don't understand English history. We start our American history usually at the Declaration of Independence. We don't even really understand that. When you can't have a proper perspective on the American Revolution unless you understand English, the English law. All right, so go to your next slide there. the first real constitution. Okay, constitutions have two purposes. They limit the extent of government power, and they bestow rights upon the people. So basically what it's just saying is, hey, these people have these rights. Government, you're not allowed to impose on these particular rights. It lists the rights. We have a Bill of Rights here. But we also have to understand England had a Bill of Rights that the colonists were living under. And what was happening was the king was violating their own constitution. They were violating the English Bill of Rights. So let me walk you through a brief understanding of English history to understand how we got to the revolution. Go to your next slide. One of the most important documents of all time. I'm sorry, scroll down a little bit more. We already went through this. Go down to where it says the Magna Carta. Probably right there. Okay. This is probably one of the most important documents in the history of mankind, especially the history of America, because our constitutional government really started with the Magna Carta. So it says here, the Magna Carta is a charter agreed to by King John of England on 15 June 1215, first drafted between the Archbishop of Canterbury to make peace between the unpopular king and a group of rebel barons. It promised the protection of, now look at these rights. This is clear back in 1215, but you can see the genesis of our constitution in here. It promised the protection of church rights. That's what our First Amendment is. The protection of barons from illegal imprisonment. Kings could just lock you up and throw you in, throw away the key without even a trial. So this started to reverse that. Access to swift justice. You know, that we see that in our constitution. And limitations on feudal payments to the crown, in other words, taxes. So then the people began to assert church rights. They you know, false imprisonment, quick trials, and a limitation on the amount of taxes that a king could put on the people. This was the genesis. This is really, and you, what you're going to see is you're going to see England's constitution evolve all the way up to the time of our constitution. So go to the next one there. Oops. It says the Magna Carta still forms an important symbol of liberty today, often cited by politicians and campaigners, and is held in great respect by the British and American legal communities. Lord Denning described it as the greatest constitutional document of all times. And I would agree, because it was the seed. It was the that our constitution sprung out of. The foundation of freedom of the individual against arbitrary authority of despots. Okay, that's what we're dealing with today. That's what we've dealt with throughout all of history. Man getting so drunk with his own power that they become a tyrant or a despot, and have the people having no way of restraining that power.
So John, it's interesting that Ruth Bader Ginsburg wanted the next president to fill her seat. So there you see the ownership and the tyranny and the authority that this select group of people think they possess.
Yeah, that's right. I cover that in detail in the book. The Supreme Court does not have the power that everybody thinks that it has. It's a paper tiger. All right. We don't have their opinions. We don't have to obey anything the Supreme Court says. If that's the case, we would have just had a Supreme Court. We would even had a president or a Congress. We could have just had a Supreme Court. And I deal with that in one of the other lessons too. I think it's lie number five. The Supreme Court was granted, you know, absolute authority. That's one of the other lies that we'll end up covering someday. But here's the definition of a despot: an emperor, king, prince invested with absolute power or ruling without any control from men, constitution or laws. Hence, in general sense, a tyrant. That's what you're seeing happening in these states today with these governors in Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan and California. These guys are tyrants, and they're not restrained by anything or anybody. They think they have absolute power. I think I just saw yesterday the governor of California just passed a law saying there could be no gas burning cars by 2025. He does not have that authority. That's a legislative authority. But they're taking all these executive orders, which were intended just to apply to the people that work for him, and they're basically writing laws as governors. Well, it's the same thing the court, we've allowed the courts to do. The courts have been writing laws for years. All right.
And so, John,
yeah.
It's a very important principle right there. And that is that what we talk about all the time is words have meaning. And the use of the phrase three co-equal branches of government has been our demise.
Without a doubt. And I cover that, I think, in one of the other lessons, too, because like I said, all these lessons are really kind of built line upon line upon line. That's why we start with one and go to the next and go to the next and go to the next. It's like going from first grade.
That's why the governor assumes that authority, because they are all equal and they can do whatever they want. So we've got to really, really, really go back to the words. When you started this show today, you talked about having to declare God as sovereign. But initially, they didn't have to declare God as sovereign. It was understood, the same as they understood what a dollar was, the same as they understood what God was. You didn't have to write it down. 1 year being 365 revolutions around the sun, it was understood.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And the Supreme Court was responsible for that, too, because most states, you had to take an oath that you believed in God. You had to believe in the Old and New Testament. These were written right in state constitutions. I go over that in another level. You weren't even allowed to hold government office in the original Declaration of Independence. In the original constitutions of all the 13 states, unless you were a church member, a lot of them said a Protestant church member, that you believed in the inerrancy of God's word. I mean, and the Supreme Court has come in and basically turned that on its head.
So, John, the point Jack was making, and I think you're spot on with it, Jack. We've been taught, folks, that there are three co-equal branches. That's what they try to tell us, right? They tell us that there's a balance of power. Well, we do have checks and balances, but the idea that all three branches of government are equal is crazy. It's foolishness, right? You just think about government in general. The king, why do they call somebody the king? Because he's the highest authority. And the legislative branch and the judicial branch, their job is to balance the power, to keep each other in their proper positions. The Constitution has what's called delineated powers. In other words, listed powers, what each branch is allowed to do. And when it comes to judicial reform, well, or judicial review, the courts have that power, but it's not ultimate power, because then the legislative can rewrite the law to fit whatever they want to, right? So folks, this, again, they've told us three co-equal branches. That's just not true.
No, and that's where they change the terminology. It's not a balance of power. It's a separation of power. So all power, and we covered this in another lesson, there are three branches of government: the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. Instead of giving all of that power, remember, the executive has the sword, the legislative passes the laws, and then the judiciary tries you for the crimes. When Nebuchadnezzar had that power, so he could pass a law, have them arrested, and have them thrown in the fiery furnace because he held absolute power. What we have done is we have separated. It's not a balance of power. It's a separation of power, because in order for this tyranny to happen, you basically have to have all three branches of government working in tandem to violate the rights of the people. So if Congress passes a law saying you can't do something, they are required, what they don't have a police force. So now they're dependent on the executive branch to go out and arrest somebody to enforce that tyrannical law. But then ultimately, then the person gets arrested and goes to court. You've got that last line of defense that the court can say, or the jury of the people can say, this guy did nothing wrong, we're letting him go. So in order for our rights to be infringed on, what you really need is all three branches of those governments not working in the checks and balances that they were intended to. If Congress passes a law and the executive says, I'm not arresting anybody, I'm in charge of the police force and the military, I'm not sending anybody, that's a stupid law.
In fact, John, wasn't that what Tippecanoe William Henry Harrison said? I may have the wrong one. Maybe it was Jackson. Anyway, yep. He said about the Supreme Court, well, they've made their law, now let's see them enforce it, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, that was Jackson. That was Jackson. He said, I think it was Taney. I think he said, Justice Taney has made his ruling, now let him enforce it. Well, that's why the Founding Fathers didn't give the Supreme Court an army to go enforce their dictates. They would have been required for the executive branch to do it. And even if those two teamed up, you still have not only the court system, which can all say that what the other two branches did was unconstitutional, but you also have a jury of the peers. And we as the people are the last line of defense, because even if all three of those branches of government team up to deprive us of our rights, we are guaranteed a day in court, and we can appeal to the last line of authority, which is the jury of our peers, and we can say, guys, we have the rights to do this. These other three branches are tyrannical, and the people can declare you not guilty. So there is,
Coach, yeah. can y'all speak on how this works with abortion? Because President Trump is not allowing, or enforcement is occurring through the executive branch, stopping people.
Mark, here's the thing. Look at the abortion issue. The Supreme Court, through a decision, legalized. I could really go deep on this. I won't. Legalized abortion. That's right. It's an opinion. That's right. And then the legislature followed suit and said, wow, they said abortions are legal. Well, we're not allowed to make a law then. We can't make a law making abortions illegal because the Supreme Court has already said that we can't. And so what we see President Trump just did yesterday is he issued an executive order saying that babies that are already born have to be kept alive. Now, Amen. We all clap our hands okay. and said, boy, what a wonderful world. Well, folks, our posterity, they are our posterity. The Constitution grants us the right to life. So the Supreme Court clearly overstepped the lines, but you hear Republicans all the time say what? Well, courts have already ruled. We can't criminalize abortion. Well, sure they can. All they have to do is make a law to do it.
Yeah, and I mean, again, go ahead.
Address what Coach just said, will you please? I know you know the answer because executive orders are for the executive department, not for you and I. So President Trump is forced to use unlawful power to correct unlawful laws, to correct ignorance by the people.
No, absolutely right. And again, this is why my book goes back to the where the problem started, because what we're dealing with today, it's like having a box full of 800 frogs. All right. And you take the lid off and the 800 frogs jump out. Right. And then you grab a frog and you put it back and then you go get another frog. And the first frog jumped out. And, you know, you're sitting there going to be going over and over and over again your entire life trying to put these frogs back in the box. And as soon as you put one back in the box, another one jumps out. This is what we've been dealing with in America. This is what we've been dealing with in America since really the 1960s. Now, in the book, I go back to 1925 where the original court case was. But this is what's happening. All these things are happening and everybody's having to react. So instead of just leaving the 10th Amendment in place and allowing the states to determine for themselves whether they want the Bible in prayer, abortion or gay marriage or anything else, those are states' rights. They have the right. The federal government had no right to come into any state and tell us what we can and cannot do. Unless it is a power given to it by the Constitution. So the Constitution does two things. It gives certain power to the federal government, and that is very rare. Create some coins, make some post offices. That's about it. The federal government was given very, very little power. And I walk you through American history in my book. The federal government was given very, very little power, and most power, 98% of the power, was given to the American people and to the states individually. What had happened over a period of 250 years is incrementally, little by little by little, the federal government has overstepped its reach. And that's what I walk you through right through in American history, is to show you ruling in court case and the 14th Amendment slowly. Where here's the illustration that I give when I do a teaching. Imagine if you had in 1776, me and Coach Dave have two properties next to each other. We both got 50 acres. All right. And there's a property pin right in the middle. Okay. Me being evil, and I want to take Coach's land, but I know if I take that pin and move it 25 acres over, he'll notice it right away. So what I do once a year, I pick it up and I move it an inch. Okay. That's going to be imperceptible. He is not going to have any idea that I just encroached on his land. All right. Next year, I move it another inch. I move it another inch. See, you don't see that. It's like the frog being boiled in water. You don't see that over a long period of time. And then by the time, go ahead, Coach.
So, John, the folks, the lie they've perpetrated on it, or as John would say, the pin that they moved was the idea of judicial supremacy. Now that's in the Constitution, but it's taken out of context in that the idea that the judges have the final say. And once the left, the communists, the left, the socialists, the God haters, call them whatever you want to. But once the left got imprinted in the mind of the people, the idea of judicial supremacy, the courts being the final arbiter, once they got that planted into the mind of Americans, they took over the courts. Can't you see what's happened? Don't you see what's happened to us? And now for the first time in my lifetime, there seems to be a tilt of the court to the right. And what do we hear the left screaming about? They're screaming about tampering with the courts because that has been their bailiwick. They have not been able to get done what they wanted done through legislation. They haven't been able to get it done through any other way. So they seized the courts, told us there was judicial supremacy, and have hammered all this illegal, unconstitutional stuff down our throats.
That's exactly right. And like I said, and the kind of the end of the story is, you know, if you've got these people, remember in the Bible, it says, do not move the ancient landmarks. All right. It was illegal for you to go move those boundary lines. And the same applies to political power. They've been moving these landmarks. They've been moving. We have landmark cases that existed clear back in the 1800s that set precedent for what this nation would be. Well, they changed.
Landmark cases, John. Interesting, isn't it? Landmark cases. Roe v. Wade, landmark case. Really, really. See what they've done to us, friends?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of landmark cases that you can't move that boundary line. Well, they don't like where the boundary line was, so they come in and reinterpret all their own court cases and overturn their own overturn the landmark court cases that existed early. So that's what I try to prove in the book, is to show the landmark cases early and show where these little property pins were moved. Well, if 250 years later, Coach goes up into his attic and he opens up a chest and he finds the original deed from the property of 1776. And he looks at it and he says, wait a minute, my family owned 50 acres and John Diamond's family owned 50 acres. Why is it I only have 5 acres now? And then he'd have to start exploring that. And then he'd have to go down to the courthouse and the court of records and said, can somebody show me where the property line was moved, where somebody, you know, where John Diamond's family bought something from me? And if he can't find anything, then he just goes to court and says, hey, look, I think this property line is in the wrong place. We need to call some surveyors in to reestablish the boundary, to reestablish this property line. Now it would be on me to prove that, hey, somehow I acquired this land lawfully. If I can't prove it, and it was just basically I kept moving the landmark and my family moved the landmark for 250 years, the courts would rule no. It needs to be, again, 50-acre split, because that's where the document shows that the property rights are. Our Constitution.
That's where originalism comes from, John. Hey, John, let's stop a minute. Let some of these guys. I'm sure they got some questions.
Hey, John.
Let them hop in here.
John.
Uh-huh.
You said there have been small movements to get where we are today, and I would agree with you. Here's my concern with our dialogue this morning, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful manner at all, but you have laid out where we were. You've done a good job of laying out where we should be, but we're not there, and we're not going to inch it back, I don't think. I think it's going to take more than an inching back. We're not there. There have been so many rights taken. And there are many people, if not a majority, but close to it, who think it's perfectly okay that the government has taken control and taken more power. So as much as I agree with the history, I'm not sure of the game plan to take it back through the system inch by inch, as we lost it inch by inch, is going to work.
No, I never once, I said it was stolen from us inch by inch. I didn't say that. I never got to the solution yet. The solution is not to take it back inch by inch. The solution is to take it back in one great big fail swoop, right back to the originalism, right back to where it was. All I do in the book is just show you how they've systematically moved the landmarks. We need just like the illustration I gave with me and Coach. If I have 50 acres and he has 50 acres and my ancestors have moved that an inch every year over 250 years. So now he has 5 acres. It's not that we're going to move the landmark back inch by inch for another 250 years. We're going to move that right back to where it was originally. And that's what our Constitution gives
and
us.
I agree, John, but how do you do one swoop? That, to me, is revolution.
That's what the name of the book is.
To me, I'm not. To me, it's either revolution, it's rebellion, and boy,
right. But who's rebelling? Us or them?
Or civil war?
Right. Well, that's what it's going to come. That's what it's going to come down to. That's what it's going to come down to. Not because we asked.
What do you think the Magna Carta was?
Yeah,
the Magna Carta was a rebellion.
I think. Can I jump in here a minute, John?
Go right ahead.
I believe Coach has said this for a long time, and I think this is the key to everything changing in the future. It's called grievance. Until enough people are grieved and go petition and go say, I don't care about my job, I don't care about anything, I'm going to go stand up and petition this because I am so grieved that I'm going to give my life and my everything I own to change this. That is when this will change. When the church, God, Coach says, I agree. When the church stands up, finally stands up, it will change. This is what God is doing, guys. He's bringing enough people like us, like-minded, that are sick of it. We're grieved to the point we're going to stand up and petition this tyrannical government.
But yeah, without
a doubt.
This is the whole point.
But don't you agree, Randy, that if God is raising up the church to all come together, it isn't necessarily to restore the United States, it's to restore the kingdom of heaven. I mean, to bring back the glory back to God, right?
And that's what America was
before
1960. America was a nation that understood the chain of command, and we lived under it. We, other than slavery, we didn't have laws that legalized anything that God says was immoral. Sex outside of marriage was not even condoned. Divorce was not condoned. I mean, there were laws that you couldn't have sex outside of marriage. You can't commit adultery. You can't get divorced. Moral laws existed before 1960, but they had to first displace God as moral authority.
You got to go all the way back to 1906. You have to go back to 1906 when they started the process. They eliminated the militia, and then they destroyed the economy, and then they destroyed the money, and you've got to go all the way back. It didn't start in the 1960s.
It doesn't matter where it started, guys. It doesn't matter. It's where we are today. Is it wrong for the righteous to stand up and tell the unrighteous to say, you're breaking God's law first, you're breaking the constitutional republic law second? It doesn't matter. It has to be the righteous to stand up and to enforce this righteous law.
Amen, Randy.
Go ahead. Well, I have a question. And those two videos you showed at the beginning, where the police were arresting peaceful people, basically doing nothing. Wonder how people would feel if there'd be more of an uprising instead of a police department, which they didn't have in the 1700s to do their work. If it would have been Chinese troops arresting those people, how would people rise up? Or UN coming and doing that? How would people feel then? Would people rise up then and say, this is enough? But since it's our own people doing it, or police, because back then, and I only talked about the Magna Carta, they did not have a militarized police department doing their bidding. We do now. So I'd like to know how would people feel if there were UN troops doing what we saw in these two videos, or Chinese troops, or somebody other troops other than ours doing that?
Well, Gary, that's what they're trying to do with the destruction of the American police state, right? They're trying to get away rid of American police so that at some point we scream and holler, please, somebody come in. Please, somebody come in and protect us. And then the yellow helmets, the blue helmets, then they're going to come in and give us the protection that we have been screaming and hollering for. Now, listen, folks, I think this is an important point. I was struck yesterday by one of the articles that the LGBT Nation, whatever, wrote about me. They called me a radical Christian. Remember that? Radical Christian. Now, here's what they're talking about, radical Christians. I think babies ought to be able to live. I think men ought to marry women. I think pornography should not be running rampant in our streets. I think men and women should be married for life. I don't want my daughter screwing around before she gets married. I think those are the standards that the average American person probably would agree with. But what they've done is they've tried to make those of us who are Bible believers appear to be radical, out of the mainstream, crazy, and that's part of the manipulation of the press.
Hey, Coach?
Yeah.
I have a question. How close do this is really to everybody. How close do you think that we are to the people in this country, especially the church, finally starting to get it and ready to push back? I just don't see it, personally.
I think we're closer than you think, but it's the same problem, Gary. There's no leadership.
Yeah.
When I was watching the video of that girl being arrested by the police down there in Logan, Ohio, I put myself sitting in those stands.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked myself, would I stood there and let that go on? And I pray to God that I wouldn't have. Are you guys with me? Do you understand what I'm saying? There were people sitting there wearing masks watching that happen. And again, it's a leadership issue. And until some of us are willing to lay it all on the line, courage engenders courage. When people see others stand, you mark my word, that guy in Moscow, Idaho, is going to be on national news. This lady in Marietta, in Logan, Ohio, is going to be national news. Why? Because the people are sick of it, but we have no leadership.
Amen. If I may jump in real quick, that we had said this when it got back to John MacArthur. Until it actually touches us in our life, are we willing to do something? When you look at that girl resisting in the stands, those people around her, because it wasn't touching them or interfering with their life, they did nothing. But the second it encroaches on them, then all of a sudden, not only are they ready to rise up, they want everybody around them to rise up. That thing with the Moscow, Idaho, if everybody that was there were on the same page, the police come and try to arrest us, let's gang tackle those cops. Let me tell you what, they would have never got cuffs on them.
Exactly. Hey, John, can you touch on titles of nobility?
Wow, that we'd be kind of chasing a rabbit there. I mean, we would definitely take us kind of off point for about the last couple minutes. I mean, the last, what do we got, 12 minutes left? I mean, we could come back and revisit that at least sometime. But here's the thing, and I just want to sum up what a lot of you guys just mentioned, is when are the people are going to get sick of it? It's going to have to happen, and I do think it's closer, like Coach says, but if it doesn't happen, what's going to happen? All right, when there was a pastor in Germany who said this, he said, when Hitler attacked the unions, I was not a union and I didn't care. When he attacked the communists, I wasn't a communist, I didn't care. When he attacked this guy and this guy and this guy, I didn't care. He said, then when he attacked the Christian church, there was nobody left to care. All right. So this is what they do. They start picking groups off one at a time. And as long as I forget who it was, but someone made a very good point. As long as it's not affecting you, you really don't care that they're arresting some woman in a stance for a mask. All right. It until it touches you, then you start to care. Well, is there going to be anybody left to care? I mean, this is what they're going to do. You have to understand them releasing these prisoners in these democratic states have nothing to do with COVID. If masks work, give the prisoners a mask. This has nothing to do with it. These left-wing communistic fascist governments are making prison space for you and me. Okay? You can put that in the bank. They are all fascists and communists arrest their political prisoners. They are putting up they are making room in prisons to imprison anybody who goes against their tyrannical dictates. And that's exactly where this is going to come to. Are we going to catch it before it's too late? I don't know. That's what I'm trying to do. That's what Coach is trying to do. That's what the Americanism course. That's what my Appeal to Heaven book is. Everything that I'm trying to do, like Coach said, we lack leadership. Everything I'm trying to do is to wake the American people up, right, to where this is headed. I told you 20 years ago where this was headed, that America was a communistic, atheistic police state wrapped in the American flag as a facade, and everybody laughed at it. Now look at what's happening in your country, and you can see that what I said is true. You have been under house arrest if you are living in one of these states. I got a guy that I work with who had his third DUI, and he at least got a trial before they put him on house arrest. He was allowed to go to the store and go to work. Other than that, he had to stay at home. What do you think all this virus restriction is? You have been under house arrest. You're allowed to go to work if you're an essential worker, and you're allowed to go to the grocery store. Other than that, you're going to be arrested. If you don't understand you're living in a police state, then I don't know what we can do to help. So you might as well just line up in the boxcars and get ready to go to the concentration camps, because that is exactly where you're headed.
So, John,
what did the Hebrew children do? They lived in a police state.
Well, that's the end of the lesson. Yeah, the end of today's lesson, and we're probably 20 slides from that, so we can pick this up. But I show you exactly what they did. They appealed to heaven. That's the last slide on this presentation here. It's the same thing our founding fathers did when they were enslaved by a tyrannical government. They appealed to heaven. It's the same thing the children of Israel did. They appealed to heaven. That is the only thing that will save this nation at this time, unless we call in the supreme judge of the universe and we start praying in precatory prayers. The church does not pray in precatory prayers anymore. Oh, that's so unchristian. Oh, that's not the spirit of love. We can't pray that God would bust them in the mouth, that God would break the jaw of the wicked, that God would cause them to fall in the pit. Man, I pray that prayer around some Christians and they look at me like I got six eyes. You have to go home and read the first nine Psalms. David understood, God understood that there are the wicked and the righteous. There are wicked people who lie in wait for innocent blood, and we don't have to sit by and take it. We can cry out to God and say, God, get them. That's what the parable of the persistent widow is. God, get them. Break the jaw of the wicked. Break the arm of the wicked. I mean, read those Psalms and ask why you have never, ever prayed one of those prayers. That is the key to turning this country around. Appeal to heaven, calling the supreme judge in and saying, God, get them.
Well, that's the, I knew the answer to my question. I mean, I know what they did. And that, I guess, that's where I'm kind of gleaning off of maybe the comments that Randy made as well. You know, Matthew 10 shows us, Jesus told the disciples to go out there two by two, and he was going to put them out there as sheep among wolves. And, you know, he gave them instructions on what to do and warned them that they might be hauled into the synagogues and flogged. And I think all this history is nice, but I think that's probably where we're at is we need to get the church revived, get back to just preaching, sharing the kingdom,
Rich.
And know that we're working against an evil government, and we're going to get flogged.
Hey, Rich, let me show you how this works. And this is my testimony. Coach Dave Dobenmeyer, when I met him, he equipped me to push back. I had the grievance in my heart. I'm grieved because of what's going on. But he equipped me to push back. Now, I go everywhere I go, I speak. I'm not afraid. I speak the truth. I go into a fast food place and I'm standing in line with 20 people. And I say, hey, folks, why are y'all wearing this mask? I don't hold back. I'm not afraid because I've been equipped. Courage begets courage. A coach says this, and this is what we have to do. This is how you push back everywhere you go all the time. And you do it when you pray, John, when you pray and you appeal to heaven, God says, I hear you. I'm going to put this in your heart. Now you can appeal everywhere you walk. You can speak this. This is how we do it.
Amen. And when they take their mask off and stomp on it, they've repented.
Yeah. Yeah. They're free.
They're free.
And that's exactly this is exactly what I told my church on Sunday morning. I said, guys, let me give you just a rundown of a confrontation. Okay. A guy comes up and says, why don't you have a mask on? And remember what Jesus did. He always went on the offensive. He never went on the defensive. The account of Jesus and when the Pharisees came and attacked him and said, by what authority are you doing this? He said, I'll answer your question if you answer one of mine. The baptism of John, was it of God or man? And they couldn't answer that. All Jesus did was ask him a question, and he left them babbling in a corner, right? So I use that same approach all the time, and even with this face mask. So someone comes up and says, why aren't you wearing a mask? I'll say, I'll answer your question if you answer one of mine. Okay, why are you wearing one? Right? And then I say, do you want to wear it? Well, no. Do you think it does any good? No. Well, if the governor told you you could take it off, would you take it off? Well, yeah. All right. Well, then you're a slave because you're doing something that you know does no good, something that you know he has no authority to tell you to do, something that you don't want to do, and you're doing it just because some government leader told you to. You are a slave. I said, and this is what I said in church. I am a slave to nobody. I'm a slave to Christ, period. And I am not going to be enslaved by man until the American people raise up and say, and I refuse to be enslaved by man. That's what the rest of this lesson is. So when we pick this thing back up, you'll see that this is exactly with manly firmness what our founding fathers did. They refused to be enslaved by their government.
John, but this is the thing. This is the human, the mindset. Even when Moses was leading them out of Israel, they still wanted to go back.
Absolutely. That's what I told them.
They still wanted to go back. And even after they had the Red Sea, they saw that great miracle. They there were witnessed it right there. They were fishing off that thing. I mean, I'm just kidding. But when they run through there, and then they saw those Egyptians getting the floods covered, the water covered back up for them. They saw this great miracle. And then 10 minutes later, Moses is up there, and they turn around, and they're making a golden idol.
Exactly. And here's the key.
This is where we're at.
Here's the key right here. And this is where you're going to find the distinction between the wheat and the tares, the sheep and the goats, the righteous and the unrighteous. God's people do not want to be enslaved. Rebellious people want to be enslaved. So, and this is what I said on church on Sunday morning. The children of Israel basically kept wanting to go back into slavery. I said, can you imagine that? They kept turning against Moses, and they wanted to return to slavery. Once they got in the promised land, they wanted to go into slavery because God told them, if you elect a king, he's going to enslave you. And they said, you're fine. So a rebellious people always wants to be enslaved. People who are led by the Spirit of Christ want the spirit of liberty. They want the spirit of freedom. They don't want anybody ruling over them except Christ. And that's the difference that we have. I can tell who's filled with the Spirit of God, like Coach Dave and most of you on this call. I can tell who's walking in the spirit of Christ and has been set free and demands that freedom, and the people that are just willing to live under a tyrant and be enslaved. I can just tell that by whether or not you're wearing a mask.
Amen, John.
John, we're running out of time here. Folks, amen. Get down to Chad's. Chad, if somebody just heard this show today and they want to come down there, down in Moody, Texas, what do they have to do, Chad?
Well, I need a $50,000 bond set. No, I'm just kidding. ask you to send an email, RSVP me at texas@saltandlightbrigade.org, and then how many are going to come and all that kind of stuff, and bring a chair. That's what we need.
Awesome. Great job this morning, John. Thanks for picking up the slack. By the way, again, I think it's important that we understand. I don't care if it takes us 6 months to get through the lesson, John. If we only do two slides a day, it's about the dialogue and the understanding and everybody being on a firm foundation as we continue to move forward. And I understand your position. You got so much in you that you want to get out, but it doesn't help you, doesn't help any of us if we get fire hosed and we haven't really chewed on the stuff that you've given us. You did a great job today. And, we'll pick it up. Probably not tomorrow, but we'll pick it up here soon. Thanks. Great job out there, all of you. And we'll see you. See you tomorrow morning.